Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and we're back for a fascinating three-part series on cap planning for the Baltimore Ravens. Joining me for this is Paul S., otherwise known as the NFL analyst on Twitter. Paul, how you doing?
Doing great, Ken.
Great first episode. If you haven't listened to the first episode, you probably want to go back and hear that first, but we set up a lot of the Ravens cap situation. Paul went through basically some things about the Lamar Jackson contract and the way the Ravens really need to restructure that as a basis of making the 2025 and 26 caps works. We really talked about it being a multi-year cap planning process and not just a single year. So the Ravens, they need to find a way to make the cap work for more than 1 year. You could do a lot of things to lever up contracts to make it work for 1 year exactly, and then detonate in your face in year two. The Cleveland Browns have a situation like that.
Yeah, the Browns are a very cautionary tale. The Eagles kind of done sort of the same thing, but are getting away with it now as far as the void years. But the Browns are an example of what can happen if disaster strikes, because they are boxed into a corner like I have never seen anyone boxed into a corner before with their cap. So I'm just grateful we have a guy like Eric DaCosta here managing things and getting things in order, because he is hands down one of the best in the business.
Yeah, there's a name. I think Pat Moriarty still works with the Ravens. I believe so. Maybe he retired. I'm not sure, because he'd been doing it forever in terms of the capologist for the Ravens, but definitely someone who's done a good job. I want to come back to DaCosta in just a second. But the other thing is, you didn't do anything, and this is important, from the first episode. In setting up the contracts, you didn't take extraordinary measures. You didn't use extraordinarily levered contracts. You re-signed a set of players that we talked about in that first episode. We're gonna hit on that again, so don't worry. You didn't miss it if you happen to miss the first episode. And you didn't do anything with void years.
No.
Terms of tacking those on. Yeah.
Yeah, no void years. Again, I think there were some extenuating circumstances that made us kind of go down that route before, that if things go according to plan, I just don't see the need really to stack that money later when you can kind of maintain it in flat and not put yourself in a precarious situation possibly down the road.
All right. And the Ravens have been an outstanding drafting team, one of the three best in NFL history since they've been in the league. Any way you slice it, either the Ravens are on top or the Packers or the Steelers. Those are the three organizations. Too bad they're playing the Steelers division, honestly, in a way. And that does create problems in terms of re-signing every player that comes due. But this plan that you've put together is largely a re-sign your own plan and not one that goes out and anticipates future free agents coming in.
Correct. And that's just the beauty of being able to draft so well is, you know, you got guys coming up for contracts and you know these guys. You know who they are. You know what they're capable of. And in turn, you can put a pretty accurate value, you know, on what they're worth to the team. When you start having to look outside the organization and trying to plug holes that you didn't in the draft, you know, with guys you don't exactly know that well and you don't exactly know how they're going to fit in, you know, that's when you kind of can get into some trouble, because those contracts are obviously at the absolute top of the market usually. You're getting no discounts. You're paying the absolute maximum. And that's a tough world to live in, when every cap dollar is so important and the edges are so small with the hard salary cap.
All right. Now, the Ravens were in a not dissimilar position last year. They had a lot of free agents. And I just want to go through this list maybe. We're going to talk a little bit about Eric DaCosta, but the re-signings were just sorcerous in their success and the signings they brought in. So they brought in four guys from off the street before we talk about who left. They brought in Derrick Henry, of course, who's one of the great free agent signings in Ravens history now, as it looks, after 1 year.
No, I'm agreeing with you.
Okay, and they brought in Josh Jones, who was signed to a fairly minimal contract, but he also got a little bit of playing time as a backup, a little bit of playing time as a sixth offensive lineman, and you need a backup tackle, even if you don't end up using him. It's kind of like your money is wasted on car insurance unless you get in an accident, but in this case, you're not too concerned about the money you gave Josh Jones. They brought in Chris Board, who actually played a much more important role than anticipated at something very close to the vet minimum, I don't know exactly what his contract was. It might have been an actual vet minimum. There might have been a small bonus to it. And then the fourth guy they brought in was Kadar Holman, who I thought might get a little bit of playing time. He got some in the preseason, and I don't think he was ever on the roster even for a week. He might have been activated for a one or two games from the practice squad, but he was then ended up being cut by the Ravens.
Correct, correct. And just sorry about the Derrick Henry thing, but what I was shaking my head at was just how good that contract looks right now. And if we rewind time to when that contract was signed, I, like yourself, was like, that's
you're talking about Derrick Henry now.
Yeah, Derrick Henry. That's just a little too rich for my blood. I've done lots of age-related studies, especially with running backs in the past. And I wasn't overly concerned, but I was a bit concerned. And man, I mean, how wrong were we? I mean, it's unbelievable the production they got out of him.
You know, I'm so happy to be wrong about that one. I watched something this morning again because I didn't even realize this was still out there. But one of the departing free agents comes to mind because of the 2020 draft. I only had a show for day one that year. Now that's expanded to we do all 3 days, and we're working on a spreadsheet together as we go through it. By the way, really want to get people listening to the draft coverage again this year because a lot of fun to do the spreadsheet as we go. But the player, the first round is being drafted. I'm doing it with Michael Crawford, and the Ravens draft Patrick Queen. And I am so visibly upset by it and you know, shaking my head. And one of the listeners puts in, I think Ken needs a hug now after Patrick Queen's got drafted, because the guy really wanted it was Xavier McKinney, who went to the Giants and has been an all-pro one now this year after being a fine ball hawk. It'd be just what the Ravens needed. They wouldn't have signed Marcus Williams. You know, a whole lot of things would have played out better for the Ravens. But that's out there as a matter of public record. It hasn't been viewed a lot of times. And there's a disconcerting disconnect between the voice and the video that somehow got messed up. But the content is still valid. That's just very upsetting to me. Anyway, watch that again. But we'll go back to now that 2020 class, which just matured this last year and had a number of players.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. Who were up for new contracts. And let's go through some of them. Justin Madubuike re-signed with the Ravens on a big money deal. Kyle Van Noy was not part of the class, but he re-signed for another 2 years, which now looks like a fantastic contract.
Another one. I'm 12. You're getting 12 and a half sacks out of this guy for that money. It's crazy. I mean, it's unbelievable. It really is.
Yeah. Malik Harrison didn't have the greatest year, to be honest, but he was playing on a qualified vet contract, so he counted the vet minimum against the cap, and then he got an extra million, so he's pretty well paid for this year, and he's still eligible for that contract again. Anybody who's been with the club for 4 consecutive years is eligible for it, so it's your Anthony Levine, longtime Ravens, who would be eligible for it, but also Tylan Wallace is eligible for it. Patrick Ricard could be eligible for it. So there are some players of note who might fit that role. Brent Urban was re-signed. I think, you know, valuable part of the defensive rotation and just a vet min guy, so we don't worry about the money. Arthur Maulette was re-signed. That one didn't work out. And I think the Ravens are going to end up cutting Arthur Maulette. You in the same place on that?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on that one.
All right. Josh Johnson re-signed. I don't think it matters. And Ardarius Washington was an ERFA. That means they just had exclusive rights to him. So they re-signed him at a minimum contract. And that, of course, worked out. He was outstanding. And then they had signed elsewhere. And the signed elsewhere list, you think, how the hell did he know on some of these from Eric DaCosta? So Odell Beckham crashed and burned in Miami. And I'm not 100% sure his career is done, but it should be.
Yeah, I think he's pretty much finished.
Jadeveon Clowney went on, actually came on down the stretch with Carolina, ended up, I think, with 6 sacks on the season or thereabouts. Maybe a guy the Ravens would have still really loved to have because they had kind of a thin edge group, but I think they passed as a matter of price in what was a good decision. In a lot of ways, the decision was between either Clowney or Henry in terms of value for 2024.
Yep. And then once again, right again. You know,
right again.
Right again.
Ronald Darby was one of the free agents I was a little bit afraid of losing because he'd had a great year with the Ravens, playing in the McDonald's system. He's one of the cornerbacks who was better in McDonald's system than he had been otherwise. But he went to Jacksonville and crashed and burned this year. Had a terrible year with, I think he was over 10 yards a target. But if he wasn't, he was close to that. So it's a really good decision to let him walk. He was fifth in the entire National Football League in yards per target in 2023.
Correct. And what I think you got to maybe look at too is these kind of lower end guys. It's like the Ravens defense last year was just absolutely stacked from front to back. So if you have a couple of these guys playing on a defense that has all-stars all over the place, and then you ship them off to a place that doesn't, you know what I mean? The likelihood is that their performance is going to drop off possibly significantly. Yeah. So I think that's a factor as well.
That certainly happened. Ronald Darby, I think, was benched twice during his time with the Broncos before he got to the Ravens. But the Ravens saw something. They thought he could fit into their system. And, if they hadn't signed him, they might have ended up with more playing time from Rock Ya-Sin, who really was not a good player in 23 with the Ravens. So it was a very good signing that year for the Ravens. And, you know, one-year arrangement, they lost him, and they're going to get a comp pick, figured into the comp pick formula. The Ravens have maxed out their comp picks with all the free agents they lost. Lost two running backs to the Chargers in Dobbins and Edwards. And whatever you may think about those two, is Dobbins had a pretty good year and Edwards had an okay year under Greg Roman, but both their play fell off dramatically from not playing with Lamar Jackson.
Yep. You harp on this point all the time, Ken. Lamar Jackson just takes these running backs into another stratosphere. And once they leave Lamar, they go kind of right back down to baseline. So,
all right, some other guys that maybe the Ravens aren't too concerned about losing. Devin Duvernay, I don't think they're really concerned about, although they did have some problems in their return game. So maybe he was a guy that they would have loved to have, but he signed for, I want to say, 2 years, $8 million or something with the Jaguars. So it's too much for the Ravens to pay. Then Tyler Huntley, not concerned. Sam Mustafa, backup lineman, replaceable. Tyler Ott was really just here on a temporary contract. He was an older guy. Actually, I think he might actually be younger than Nick Moore. It might be close, but it didn't matter. They wanted to go back to Nick Moore, who was injured and replaced by Ott in 2023. Then you add Rock Ya-Sin, absolutely no loss. And then there's five other guys on this list they lost, and they could have been anywhere between moderate losses and big losses. The first is Delshawn Phillips, who is a pretty darn good special teams player and a backup Mike linebacker for the Ravens in 23. That is a guy that they probably could have used in 24 to help some of their weak side linebacker woes.
Gotcha. Yeah. The situation inside linebacker next to, Smith Roquan is definitely needs to be figured out. Think we should say.
Either through the draft or through good coaching and the hiring of Tyler Santucci, they've got a couple different ways to get there. They let both guards walk. John Simpson, who didn't have a bad year for the Jets, certainly, and Kevin Zeitler, who had a great year for the Lions.
Yeah, and that just kind of fits into your guard spots. Maybe you can kind of focus more on the drafts for that type of stuff versus, you know, a Zeitler type or a veteran guy who's going to be making a decent amount of change there.
Yeah, Zeitler was cheap. He was like $6 million. John Simpson might have been a similar thing, but they had to commit to 3 years. Lions only had to commit to one with Zeitler. So it's an interesting pair of guys they let go there, and they did end up getting some compensatory return. Geno Stone fell off the table after he left the Ravens. In fact, he might be cut this offseason. I don't think it's happened yet, but it might happen at the beginning of the league year. And he might even be a guy the Ravens want back to try and solve their safety issues or give themselves another backup split field safety.
Wouldn't exactly be a bad idea, Ken. And the way the Bengals structure their contracts, they give no guarantees but the signing bonus. So they can pretty much cast him aside with no real penalty. And, that's definitely a possibility. And he could definitely fit back in the mix if available.
Right. And the big one that I always come back to is Patrick Queen. 3 years, $41 million from the Steelers. Very similarly structured, as you just mentioned, a highly team-friendly deal. they can actually get out of that contract. And I believe they've only got about $14 or $15 million in on that, and they save the rest of it in terms of cap hit by, it might be $22 million, $24 million that they save in cap hit from cutting Patrick Queen. I thought that might happen, and he's at the Pro Bowl. I'm just not convinced the Steelers are willing to hit the ejector button just yet, but they have some leverage. They could go back to Patrick Queen, who had a terrible year, and say, hey, we want you to take less money.
Yeah, so one of the things the Steelers kind of fall back on with the lack of guarantees is we don't cut guys early when we give them contracts. So you're going to play out your contract, and yeah, the guarantees might be light, but we don't kind of release guys early like that. So saying that, I think it's highly unlikely that the Steelers release him. And you're right, they could. It's signing bonus only, I think, was $13 million plus $1 million for the base. So just like the Bengals and Geno Stone, if they wanted to, they could get out of that deal easily. One thing about the Steelers that you should take note about this offseason is their cash spending is extremely low right now. We're in the middle of the three-year cash spending window, and they are way behind the eight ball as far as cash spending. And due to their poor drafts from 3-4 years ago, they don't exactly have a lot of homegrown guys to actually pay. So the Steelers, you know, as a side, they're going to have to spend some cash. So that just makes it even less likely that they'd be parting from a guy like Queen, you know, because of that situation where they've pretty much got to spend almost $100 million this offseason to get back to the track.
That is really something I would have not picked up on in terms of a nuance. I appreciate you bringing that to us, Paul, because that's a really good one. And I know you wanted to talk about other things Eric DaCosta had done well in the draft. I'll ask, do you want to save that for the third episode and lead off with that? Because we got something to talk about. But the point I was making is a point that's going to be reiterated by Paul, I think, in this third episode, is that you have a hometown team here who is drafted so well that we have to make the heartbreaking decisions are made here about our players, as opposed to the other much worse decisions of having who you go out and overpay in the market.
These are what we call good problems to have, Ken.
Yeah.
These are good problems when we can pick and choose and decide. And I know you like poker, and I thought of a good poker analogy for you. And that is, I think we're sitting at the table with the biggest stack on the table right now by a long shot. We don't have to take any risk. We can play it pretty close to the vest. If we get a re-raise over us, we can just fold our hand and keep going. But we're in a position of total control when it comes to these guys and re-signing them and getting them in the fold long-term, because there's so many of them that if we can't get it done with a few of them, or one or two or three of them, we'll still be fine. You know what I mean? So we can put our best offer out there, our best foot forward, and there's just no pressure. You know, they're operating from a position of total strength because of how well they've drafted in the recent past.
All right. All right. Outstanding stuff here. Now, we promise you we would get to the offense in this show, so let's go ahead and do it. The number of players on offense who need to be re-signed. Some others you didn't even include, but we're gonna go through the guys you have here. Take us through maybe one player at a time who you want to re-sign that's a priority right now.
Sure. I guess we'll start with the easy, quick ones first. Pat Ricard, like I said, I think we're in kind of agreement on him, kind of where he's going to be at money-wise. I think that should be pretty easy deal to get done. He wants to be here. We obviously want him back leading the way for Henry. So I think that's going to get done, you know, at fairly close to those numbers, maybe give or take. But I think that's an easy one to start with.
Okay. So Patrick Ricard, you have him as 2 for 5, 2 for 6, somewhere around $2.5 to $3 million per year. And that seems reasonable to me. And what I would hope, and this might or might not work, is that they can give a qualified veteran contract to Ricard, which would put him in right around $2.7 million. A million of that would not count against the cap. That is a very significant element and a source of cap savings. So if Ricard would agree to that kind of contract, he might. We talked about this a little bit on another show. Ricard has a tremendous local endorsement position with a combination of Pizza Bowley's and Royal Farms. And I would think that Royal Farms might be looking for a new spokesman about now. Yeah, so It could actually work out for Patrick Ricard. Seriously. I mean, to stay in Baltimore, he's the natural to take over the position for Justin Tucker. I'll be interested to see what the Super Bowl is coming up. Royal Farms will have local ads on the Super Bowl. You probably know the Super Bowl ads are split out basically between local stations get to sell about 1 minute per hour, I think it is, or maybe 90 seconds per hour, and the network sells the rest. And the local commercials will probably include Royal Farms and some banks and other stuff like that. But it's a great opportunity to see if they've cut the Justin Tucker commercials already. This weekend, Sunday, will be a big test in that regard.
Yeah, and Ricard's not getting that Royal Farms money anywhere else. So yeah, that's another little kind of added perk, you know what I mean, for him to kind of stay around. And like I said, for that contract, I mean, I don't think that's going to be a big deal to get done. So,
and the total amount of risk with the number of teams who even play with a fullback, I don't think there's anybody who's going to be incented to change their offense to play with a fullback because, oh, they can get Patrick Ricard. So you're really talking about the 8 to 10 teams that actually play a significant number of fullback snaps. And then, you know, the main competitor would seem to be the LA Chargers.
I would totally agree there. 49ers and maybe Chargers. Yeah. On the West Coast. Yeah. I totally agree, but it's not many teams out there. It's just not many that are going to want to put that in the mix. All right.
So fair enough. So hopefully Ricard is back. You mentioned some things. You think he'll be back based on what you've heard in terms of his own quotes from after the season.
Correct. He clearly wants to be a part of this team. So I don't exactly see the Ravens not making that happen for the amount of dollars we're talking about.
Fantastic. Who's next on your list of re-signs to keep the core intact?
Next is Isaiah Likely. Isaiah Likely, I think, has clearly number one potential. He has Mark Andrews' potential, but, you know, he's been sharing time. In looking at the salary structures, I kind of tried to break it into tiers. And if you look at the top tier, he's obviously not in that group, and that would be Mark Andrews, coincidentally, Goedert, TJ Hockenson, George Kittle. He's probably a tier below that. You know what I mean? If we had to really dive in, and that's a kind of in the 15 to 18.5 million range. So I think about 4 years, 64 million, 16 million average annual value. He's being paid like a starter. If Mark Andrews is here or not, he's going to be getting his money regardless. And I think that's kind of a fair deal for both sides, because I think if he played it out and went to the market, he might push up into the 18 million range. We're paying him a year early. So I kind of feel like that's the sweet spot in order to get him retained long-term.
All right. So I'm looking at a spreadsheet that Paul sent me. It's extremely well done. It's so much above what I normally get, so much more material than normal, but he's going through all the contracts for tight ends. And he has a what these existing contracts are. Tell me, where is your adjustment in here to make them equivalent to current year values? So Mark Andrews' contract was signed, 3 years ago now, right? And so
right. Just like talking with before, you know, you measure the increase from that year to the current cap, and you can figure out what the 2025, you know, average annual value would be by using that multiple. So Mark Andrews, you know, for example, his deal was 14 million average per year. But if you take into account cap increases, that's about 21.14 million in 2025 dollars.
Okay, I see it. And that's the 1.52 multiple or whatever it was you talked about before that
Correct.
You've applied to that. And that's the overall increase in the NFL cap since that year is what you're applying to present value these contracts in 2025 dollars were they signed now. So it's extremely well done. I'll just say it's good financial analysis. I don't think there's been any trend towards paying tight ends more money or whatever. That if you look at guards, you might have a different question you're answering, but in terms of tight end, I don't see a lot more money going out the door to tight ends.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back at when these deals were signed, all these top deals were 2021, 2021, 2023, and 2020. So really the top of the tight end market has stayed fairly flat recently. So that can only be a good thing for us. But yeah, because the same cap percentage that would have been when Mark Andrews signed his deal transfers to the 2025 number. The cap percentages would be exactly the same because you're normalizing, you know, that salary from when he signed it.
Okay. All right. Very good. Now, I think I'm on board. We see you're 4 for 64 is a year early. So you're saying if he waited, he might be able to get 4 for 72. That $8 million is the Ravens' share of divisible benefits. And so you hear me use that term. The player doesn't want the risk. The team wants to get a player signed for a little bit less a year earlier. It's life-changing generational wealth for a player like Likely, obviously, and you know, for any of us, if we got a $4 for $64 million deal, we'd be hard pressed not to take it if there was some injury risk on the table in a coming season. So it's a good deal for both sides, and hopefully one that does that. Now here's a key point. You're 4 for 64 unlikely. He plays out the final year on his current contract, then is signed an additional 4 for 64, correct?
No, that 4 for 64 would be if we signed him right now this offseason and added 4 more years, you know, to that final year.
Okay, let me be clear. He's under contract for 5 years, including 2025, under your plan.
Correct.
That's good.
Correct. 5 years total.
Okay, and he just gets a bunch of signing bonus in 2025 because he's signing the contract now. So that's
correct. Currently, he would make $3.325 million in 2025. A new signing bonus would be around that $16 million to put in his pocket. And if you kind of go back to the draft pedigree, he's a third round pick, wasn't a first round pick, so hasn't really made a lot of money, thus far. But I think his salary range is pretty defined because he clearly has a higher ceiling than the kind of third tier guys, and probably not as much as a ceiling as the best. So he kind of fits right in that middle range of, you know, of 15 to 18 million, somewhere in that range.
Are you concerned at all about the Ravens harvesting only, say, 75% of the value of each of these two players because they're both on the same team at the same time?
As far as which two players?
So you've got Andrews and Likely, and they're both competing essentially for some of the same playing time. And while Monken has done a great job with efficiency at tight end, the tight end passer rating throwing to him is 143.5 the last 2 years. It's actually, like, by the way, this is interesting. It's 141.1 and 141.3 in the 2 years individually, but combine the two together, the passer rating is 143.5. And the reason for that is they've maxed out certain categories like interceptions and tight end rate and whatnot, touchdown rate, and actually combining those years makes it even a little better than the 141 point whatever. But getting aside from that, been remarkably efficient in terms of the tight end play they've gotten, but they've also not gotten a lot of targets. So with Andrews leading the tight ends in 2022, Likely was here also, but Andrews led the tight ends. They had 195 targets as a group. They're down to 110 targets in 23 and 138 targets in 24. So they're just not as big a part of the offense. So my question is, let's say that increases even to 150 targets with Likely being signed long-term. Is that enough to be paying what would be what, 27, 28 million worth of, or more of cap dollars for two tight ends to be on the team at the same time?
It would be counter argument to that, which is what I wanted to kind of get into with a little bit with Andrews, but it fits here as well, is that, you know, I heard Kevin Oestreicher on your show the other day talk about, you know, well, if we're paying Likely this, we definitely can't afford, you know, too much money for tight ends. But look at it like pass catchers, okay, because that's mainly what these guys are, okay? And then look at the overall pass catcher depth and where it is for the next 2 to 3 years as far as known quantities. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like, as we saw when Zay went out, there's a lot of added insurance there, you know, with those two tight ends in case something ever happened and somebody got hurt at wide receiver. As we saw, they didn't skip a beat with those two tight ends because they were able to shift and roll that in. So I would implore people to look at it not as tight end wide receiver, but as a combined group and what that looks like now and going forward, and how we can provide insurance in case of injury, you know, in that overall picture.
Okay. I like that argument. I like that. So I think I find that argument to be very compelling. Oftentimes you'll hear me say on the show, I don't really find that could be compelling, but that's a very compelling argument. And the Ravens, thinness at wide receiver has been an issue that's been largely fixed by tight ends in 22 and in 24 at times. And also they've had injury problems at tight end itself, with Mark Andrews being out for an extended period at the end of the 23 season and likely stepped in and did a bang up job then. And that's why his name really came to the forefront. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And I like your contract, your total contract value on Likely. So let's move on. Who do you want to talk about next?
Sure. Okay. So next up is, I would argue, the most important one, and that is Ronnie Stanley. As you have said many times before, there's only so many of these type of humans on the planet. And I think we really need to make an effort to get him back in the fold at a reasonable number. Again, he's another guy we know. We know all the medical. We know how to price that all in. And another guy who I think might, going under this contract, his third contract, these third contract guys, who might be willing to work with the Ravens just a little, just enough, you know, to make the value something that we can handle. And like I said before, he's already on the books for $8 million as it is. So if we signed into a new contract that I project here, I'm hoping we can get him at $16 million times 3 years. His first year cap number is going from $8 million to $9 million. So it's really not that much of a difference if we can get him under the fold. And I would try, I'm not sure if you're going to be successful or not, in really minimizing the guarantees outside of the signing bonus or putting some incentives in there to kind of further protect, you know, just in case those injuries start popping back up.
Okay, so multiple questions about this come up. The first one is, I'm not sure about NLTBEs and how much Ronnie would appreciate that. I wouldn't say he got snubbed for the Pro Bowl, because I don't think he really deserved it this year, honestly, but he did have a lot invested in making the Pro Bowl. And there was something, I want to say the number was north of $5 million, might've been $8 million.
It was $8 million.
That's an unbelievable wager on making the Pro Bowl that he lost. So the question I would have is whether or not he'd want some sort of playing time incentives, or he'd ask the Ravens to pay a portion of the Pro Bowl bonus as an increment to the guy. I don't know what he would do, but I'll just say, I don't think he's as incented to take either bonuses, which are NLTBE bonuses, which would be a possibility. It's actually, by the way, much harder to get a player under NLTBE bonuses when they're not coming off an injury, because you have to base it on the previous year's levels reached, and he already played pretty much all the snaps, and so you'd have to be going to some other esoteric level he might not be willing to gamble on, and I don't think he's going to be just real eager to do that. The other thing, you've got him very economically in your plan here at $68 million. You have right here for him.
I upped it to 17. I started at 16, and then after looking at it again, one comp, Taylor Decker, is as good as a comp as you can get for Ronnie Stanley. If anybody ever wants to pull his contract up, first round pick, same type of career path. And like I said, I think if Ronnie Stanley hit the open market, I think some team would give him 4 for $80. I think that's kind of where he would be, just because of how rare that position is. And I know there's some team out there who would see his play last year and say, man, we could be getting a great offense left tackle here for $20 million versus 35 or 30, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think if he hits the market, I think $20 million is the number. So that's why if I'm the Ravens, I'm trying to angle for 17 and maybe throw some playtime incentives in there, you know, to give him that little carrot.
Okay. All right. Well, it certainly could be done. Again, it's harder to structure coming off a year where he played almost all the snaps to start with, but it could be done. And you know, the game that you're playing there is you push them into next year's cap with an NLTBE bonus. The other thing that Ronnie has some negotiating leverage with the Ravens based on the void dollars that are there. So you mentioned it earlier when you said, he's either cost the Ravens $8 million or $9 million. What you meant is $8 million for not having Ronnie Stanley and paying that money in void years versus $9 million under the new contract that would have a first-year cap hit of that $9
million. Correct, correct. Yeah, I mean, like I said, he's already on the books for eight. So, I mean, it would just make all the sense in the world if they could get him back, you know, on that minimal contract, you know, to go ahead and do that. Like I said, I'm just trying to gauge. I think it's 50-50. I know what I wanted to mention. The things I've heard.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ronnie say recently, especially this year in interviews and such, gives me a little more confidence that he kind of wants to work with them versus kind of the rumblings we were hearing pre this past season. Because Ronnie, I think, has been he's a little mercurial guy. But this past year, I really noticed like his whole attitude, maybe it's just from the health, his outlook and his positivity towards a lot of things in the team has changed a little bit. So I hope that kind of factors into him wanting to finish out his career here, wanting to be put up in the Ring of Honor, and hopefully winning the Super Bowl, because I don't think there's many better places to do that outside of here in Kansas City over the next 5 years.
And that's, I think the Ring of Honor is one of the things that the Ravens can point to. They could say, hey, Ronnie, you know, one more contract really guarantees it. I don't think he's quite put together a Ring of Honor career, whereas I'd say that Andrews has. Andrews is in whether he comes, leaves, stays, or prays. You know, comes, goes, stays, or prays. Right. In the case of Stanley, I don't think he's got it yet, and I think he would really need to play the next contract. I do think a contract like this has high old maid risk, meaning that he'll sign for three, play two, and you'll be end up overpaying on your signing bonus for the 2 years he does play. Just think. Particularly if they were able to win a Super Bowl in the second year, I think there's a good chance he doesn't play his third under this contract.
Yeah, remember, in all these projected contract extensions, that last year in pretty much all of these deals is kind of a team option we can release with minimal penalty anything. So always remember that when you're looking at when the contract ends, that last year is really kind of just a placeholder, so to speak, in a lot of these deals.
Okay, but you've also used fairly flat contract values where you haven't used the big hockey stick increases in base salary that would provide a lot of padding to the release value. So he's gonna have less than he would on most of the contracts that are typically structured by the Ravens in terms of a final year salary number that the Ravens can actually save. So while it is team friendly, most team friendly contracts are most team friendly because you get out of them super early, not super late. Like the Patrick Queen contract this year, team friendly because you get out of it after 1 year. It's not team friendly after 2 years necessarily.
Well, I will say, Ken, in my Stanley contract projection, that last year is pretty backed up.
How much?
Just because of his injury history, I've got a $22 million base salary in that last year. Now,
and that includes roster bonus or whatever. You don't have a separate roster bonus to go with that.
Yeah, because roster bonuses, that's a lot of stuff that could go 18 different ways. So I just tried to, we really just need the signing bonus and the proration. But I do have his contract backloaded slightly into that final year because of the injury history and because of the past stuff. So where if they did need to. Now, could he come back and say, "That's I want more earlier"? Of course he could. But in an ideal world, you know what I mean? That last year would be kind of a, if you're playing well, we're going to keep you. And if not, you know, we're going to move on.
In terms of what you've got in your plan, this to me so far is the most aggressive thing I've seen yet. I think that Ronnie Stanley probably commands more than that on the market. And I think if you can get, if it's 4 for $80 on the market, I think 4 for $76 is reasonable, possibly. I don't think 4 for $68 is reasonable. So we'll see how that plays out. And, you know, I'm hopeful they'll re-sign Ronnie, but they may take a very draconian approach and just say, hey, if you're the right player at the right price, we'll keep you. But if we're not, you know, we have to decide between places where we can get ROI on our money between you and, say, Mark Andrews, and we have to figure out where we can save a little money.
I don't disagree, Ken. I don't disagree.
Let's move on. Who's your next player?
Next player is a little interesting one, and that is Tyler Linderbaum. As I was just listening to your Edge podcast, and you kind of got into him a little bit with the fifth-year option, how that's really not an option, and the center out-of-whack salary structure when it comes to all that stuff in the fifth-year option. So, but this is an interesting one because I've heard on your previous podcast how you are a little down on Linderbaum as far as his play was concerned. And the weird thing is you look at the top of the center market and there's just a handful of guys making over $10 million. I mean, it's Creed Humphrey. It's another guy at 13. It's another guy at 11. And then after that, it's nothing. So this one was a tough one to nail. I did this a little while ago and thought maybe even with the cap increase, the Creed Humphrey deal, 4 for $72 would be about right. But I could totally see the Ravens trying to get that much lower into maybe 13, 14 range. That would still put him, you know, third overall or fourth overall and try to do that. But I'd be interested to hear what you kind of think as far as that's concerned and as far as the pay scale.
Okay. So in terms of 2025 adjusted AAV, you've got Frank Ragnow at $20.4 million per year, Creed Humphrey at $19.4 million, and Lloyd Cushenberry at $13.5 million. And those are the top contracts currently out there.
Correct. I think those are the top three right there.
Yeah, his position is definitely between Cushenberry and Humphrey in terms of value. Right. I would say the issue is that he really did not consolidate his gains as a pass blocker. Bad rookie year as a pass blocker. I don't think there's any surprise to anybody in me saying that PFF rated his overall year very good because of the run pass blocking weighting they do, which doesn't make any sense. But then he came back and had a great year, and really had a great year relative to the quality of competition he faced in his second year. And then he was one of the top two or three centers in the entire league in blocking relative to assignment in 2023. But then he came back to earth in 2024, and he's in a very big pack below about seven other guys at center and in a pack with about, you know, total 14, 15 guys in it, where I think he's really more of just a slightly above the league average pass blocking center. And you can talk about run blocking all you want, but in the NFL, pass blocking is more important. I don't care how PFF weights it on a whatever basis, whatever position you're playing on the offensive line. So I would say he's worth a contract, certainly in the 75th percentile, and he's going to get a contract that's higher than that. But I wouldn't go as high. I wouldn't go anywhere near as high as $19.4 million for him. If I were trying to pick the number based on what you've got here, I would put him in at 15 to 16 million.
Yeah, I was going to say about 4 for $60 or so, maybe 4 for $64. And as I've said, normally I don't like to wait on these guys, but this is one situation where his cap number will actually raise $4 million on an extension. So kind of if you let him play it out and get the free agency, you know, what type of offer is he going to get? Maybe he has another middling year or what have you. Mm-hmm. Could you even get him next year at that number versus doing it now? Is kind of a question, even though that's kind of risky. And I guess it really determines how much they value him long term and what they see his play at you know what I mean, relative to these contracts, because there's just not many comps to go off of if he's going to push towards that top end, you know, pay structure. So
he's, by the way, I don't want to, I'm not down on Tyler Linderbaum overall. He's a special talent. He's a very different player from most other NFL centers. Tremendous mobility really helps the Ravens run game in some significant ways. I cannot see paying him at the top of the market. And in this case, the first thing I'm doing is I'm saying, I'm sorry, Tyler, we can't do the fifth-year option for you. It just doesn't make any sense. It's left tackle money. We can pay you right now. We can give you 4 for $60 or 4 for $64, one of those two. Either one is really okay with me. And next, if you want to play it out, we completely understand it. But we have to look at this from keeping as much of this team together as we can. And we can't pay you probably, if you wanted 4 for $80, that's not on the table. We can't give you what Creed Humphrey's making. And we really can't give you 4 for $72. But what we can do is send you to the market at least with a great baseline contract after the 2025 season. And I would think that would be at least 4 for $64. So if you want to play it out and really bet on yourself, we understand it. If you don't want to do it and you want to sign now, $16 million is our number, or $15.5 million, or whatever it might be, for an AAV over 4 years. And that is the way I would handle that negotiation. I wouldn't try and pay him the top dollar right now. And I definitely would tell him, sorry, that the fifth-year option just doesn't make sense.
This is exactly what I was saying before. You know, I think you're exactly right. You're coming ahead from a position of strength, kind of, you know, where it's like they don't have to, you know, they don't have to step out on many ledges right now. So it's like you go to them with a good number. If that's, you know, agreeable to them, great. And if it's not, you know, you just keep it moving and you go on to the next guy. But I kind of, like I said, I've been listening to a lot of your podcasts recently, specifically with him. And my 4 for $72 numbers kind of dropped down after listening to your, and I'm not saying he's a bad center or anything, but he's maybe not the elite top two, you know, we were kind of projecting. He's still a very good, you know, top five. Guy and should be paid as such. So
to be clear, in 2023, he completely earned his Pro Bowl status. He deserved it. It was a well-earned, great year he had. And in 2024, he just didn't have as good a year. And part of it is the players around him. Playing next to the combination of Fa'alele and McCary was not nearly as good as playing next to Zeitler and Simpson, who were just a you know, a better pair of guards out there. And that hurt him. But anyway, he's a guy who passes the sniff test as a Raven through and through. I'm sure they would love to have him. And by the way, Tyler, if you sign your next contract with Baltimore, you're almost guaranteed to be in the Ring of Honor. Almost guaranteed. If you stay healthy, certainly that would be the case. You'd be an 8-year center with the Ravens. You know, that will do the job. Your name will be up on that, that part of the stadium. So hopefully he does it. And hopefully it's not this is definitely a case where there's divisible benefit on the table. And this is also a case where I'd play a little bit of hardball. I think it's a potential savings where I think you have Stanley too cheap. I think Linderbaum you have too expensive. And I think that's good because we have some offsetting value to harvest there.
Yeah. And it's like one of the things you obviously look at upside and downside. And what is his really upside salary wise if he played out the final year? Right. I mean, it's going to be a difference probably if he plays well. If he doesn't get injured, if everything goes to plan, is the upside 18 or 19 at the top, or maybe even 20?
Maybe 20.
You know what I mean? Is that trade-off worth it to him to minimize that risk? I think, like I said, you're right around the ballpark. I'd be in 4 for $15 or 4 for $64 at the $16 million.
Yeah. All right. Fantastic. Let's go on to the next player.
Oh boy, this is going to be a good one, Ken, because there is quite the controversy. Bubbling under the surface about Mr. Mark Andrews. And that's kind of what started me down this journey. Really just, I like doing age research as far as when guys are typically going to drop off and putting together things like this. And I mean, Mark Andrews is tracking to be at least the top 10 all-time tight end, if not higher. I mean, through his age 29 season, he was ninth in tight end yards all time. He is fifth in touchdowns all time. And your favorite metric, yards per target, third all time right now, ever, of anyone.
Among tight ends.
Yes, among tight ends. So I think when you put all that together and you stack him up with his, you know, similar players here, Mark Andrews is far from done as an NFL player. And I don't know. I know that's not the sentiment around these parts these days. And I just would be, this is such a tough one. This is such a tough one because I can make arguments on both sides. But I just, Mark is a legacy Raven. Again, going back to the likely thing when we talk about the tight ends and wide receivers combined, we're lacking depth there. He's Lamar's most familiar target that's been with him the entire time. He's his most reliable outside of a few key drops. And I'm just not one to think that the Ravens are going to kick a guy like this to the curb. Even if that's not what they're doing, that's what it's going to be perceived that they're doing because of that drop. And I just think trade value, I think because of that drop, it hurt a little bit. And what are you really getting back anyway in that market? So his stock is kind of down right now. So, and I feel like if the Ravens went to him and presented a team-friendly offer to him and showed him that they have his back and that, you know, we're going to keep moving forward and you're going to go on the Ring of Honor and you're a legacy Raven, I think that's more likely than them tossing him to the side. I just really do. I know everybody's going to disagree with me, but when you look at his production and what he should be doing the next few years, he could be a key component to this offense moving forward and to winning a Super Bowl. And
I'm with you. And I think we talked about in the likely section, the, you know, getting full value out of two tight ends in a decreased tight end target environment that the Ravens seem to have. And you make the argument very, very well about, no, his overall pass catching depth, and we should want that. I'm a little concerned about the possibility that he wouldn't play out another 3-year contract, that he wouldn't be able to finish it up due to either injuries or ineffectiveness, with probably injuries about 75% of that total and ineffectiveness 25%. But what do you have for him on a 3-year deal then? Or it's a 3-year extension you're proposing?
Yeah, let me reach here. Yeah, 3 for $36. Again, that would be a very team-friendly deal.
Okay, so the 3 for $36, first of all, is $36 million added for 3 years in addition to 2025, where he's already on the books.
Correct.
Okay, so he signed for the Ravens through 2028, so he's got to play 4 seasons. So we're already bought into the age 30 season, I believe it is, for Mark Andrews, or maybe it's 31 that's coming up, right?
30 coming up, we'd be paying him through. The extension would cover 31, 32, and 33.
Gotcha. Okay. He's 30 is coming up. Let me look at that for just 1 second here. I want to make sure of what I'm saying, and I'd like to be clear rather than leave this hanging over us. Okay. So he's right now, he's 29 years, 152 days. On September 6th, he'll turn 30. So we'd have him for 30, 31, 32, and 33. That's pretty long in the tooth for a tight end, but he's proven that I think that speed is not the exclusive component to his game.
One of the things I noticed with tight ends doing this is their drop off is not as severe as, say, a wide receiver who's mm-hmm. used to putting up significantly higher yards per reception, yards per target numbers. It's a little flatter because the tight ends don't start from that high of a place in the first place. And I share your concerns, but if you just go back and look at these top 10 guys, Ken, I mean, they're all playing until 34, 35. I mean, every one of them. And that's the group Mark Andrews is going to be in. He just is. I know the concerns there, but, and even their yards per target after age of 30 or after the age of 29, where Mark is now, yeah, they dropped off, but they didn't drop off a whole lot. You know what I mean? They definitely was a drop off, you know, in their performance. But again, that last year, age 33 year, is pretty much a dummy year anyway. You know what I mean? He's never going to see that final year. So in reality,
it's a team option
through his age 32 season.
Yeah, and team option for the third year. Sometimes that can become a team and player option. And Michael Pierce is retiring a year before. It appears Michael Pierce is retiring a year before the end of his contract. And you don't want to have that situation either. That's what I call an old maid contract, that the player then forces you to re-sign them for 2 years to make one because they're still a productive player on what should be the team's option. So that's where I, that's what I'm terming an old maid contract. But let me go back to you. You have two examples cited from Ravens history that are very interesting and go in opposite directions. Todd Heap, in the 2010 season, I believe it was, I'll bring it up here. Yeah, the 2010 season had his best yards per target year of his entire career at 9.4. He had actually 15 yards per reception that year, which is just, it's completely out of whack with the rest of his career. He never had more than 12.9 otherwise. But he had his best year, you know, arguably. It wasn't a lot of receptions, wasn't a lot of targets, played 13 games. And the Ravens, after that age 30 season, they cut him. And that was an example where Ozzie at the time said, a year too early rather than a year too late on a player. The Ravens needed cap space, and they made it by cutting a very popular player. And we'll get to let's respond to that before we talk about popular player number two.
Yeah, now refresh my recollection. Todd Heap battled a lot of injuries, or am I misremembering that along the way?
No, he had injuries. There's a certain injury. He only played 13 games his final year.
I feel like Andrews one has been a lot healthier, outside of the hip drop, specifically, which is, you know, kind of random. And also, I think one of the things you got to factor in here is quarterback stability in this production going forward. And I haven't obviously gone into the QB stability of all these top tight ends, but I suspect that's going to add, you know, to what Mark's capable of if he's playing with Lamar Jackson for his age, you know, 30 through 33 seasons versus someone else.
But I don't think I can accept. That's going to be a non-compelling argument, because if they pick up another tight end, that tight end is going to be elevated by the presence of Lamar Jackson, the way that Derrick Henry and every other running back has been.
Gotcha. One other thing I'd just like to highlight is the lack of spending at tight end and wide receiver in general towards the cap. Mm-hmm. As it stands right now, they are 20th between wide receivers and tight end in the NFL. If they signed Andrews and Likely, they would actually drop down to 21st because of the savings, you know what I mean, of Mark Andrews mainly. Okay. So when you look at it from, again, kind of that standpoint, there isn't a lot of asset allocation in the pass catchers going forward because of Zay and because of Bateman being so cheap the next 2 years.
Well, the asset allocation is in the form of draft capital instead of cap. So Zay is going to make a significant amount of money at some point, and it may or may not be with the Ravens, but the Ravens have been smart to be kind of, and with it, to be ahead of the curve in terms of not paying wide receivers. So they've drafted them instead. And so they got Marquise Brown, and then they traded him for an unbelievable heist of a value from Arizona when they did that. And then they got Flowers, of course, that worked out great. They got Bateman, which didn't seem like it was working out great. And then Bateman signs the second contract, which is now one of the most valuable receiver contracts there is out there in terms of surplus value over contract value expected over the next 2 years. They've done exceptionally well at the position, but I wouldn't say that they've spent no resources on it. There's draft resources and there's cap resources. They've spent draft resources.
Yeah, no, I'm referring to cap mainly. And with Zay and Bateman being locked in for the next 2 seasons, I think that gives you an opportunity to entertain Mark where, you know, what are the fans? Oh, we need more wide receivers. Go sign this wide receiver. Go sign that one.
Yeah.
We've got one right here, okay, that is, you know, we know better than anyone. Lamar knows better than anyone. I know it ended poorly, but again, I don't see the benefit in subtracting that or the risk in paying him on a team-friendly deal going forward. I think the downside is less than people would think.
Okay, so I'm devil's advocate only on this. And by the way, I would be completely in favor of signing Andrews to an extension of the type you are projecting here. I think it'd be an outstanding deal. And I think he has value above the amount the Ravens can save and his base salary then for 2025. So I think he has trade value as well, would be what I'm saying. But I'll tell you what he has even more value. He's way more valuable at $11 million this year and $12 million, as you have it projected, for three more years than any kind of four Odell Beckham signings of 1 year each during that period, which would cost you 50% more.
You know what you have with this guy. You know, you know what you have. Lamar knows what you have. Lamar's familiar. I mean, it just wouldn't make much sense to me to cast him aside, whether through trade or release or what have you, and then bring somebody else in to replace that same thing you just gave away for essentially the same amount of money. I just feel like the past history and like I said, his familiarity and how well we know him, it just makes too much sense to kind of keep him in the fold and keep that other option there for Lamar in case of injury to Zaire Bateman in a pinch or wherever. The depth at wide receiver / tight end is just, it's lacking right now. And I just don't know that they're in a position to be casting him aside like that.
Okay. Well, hopefully that works out. And I actually hope that it provides some other lubrication for the Lamar Jackson deal, that it makes it easier for that to be signed based on the fact that, hey, Mark Andrews is coming back. Derrick Henry is coming back, of course. You haven't got an extension for Derrick Henry in this thing, by the way. We haven't talked about that, but Derrick Henry playing with the Ravens in 2026 is still up in the air.
Yeah, as far as Derrick Henry's concerned, again, 2025 we're kind of pretty good in. I don't want to, going back to last offseason, I'm not exactly going to try to extend that or let him play it out. Let's see what happens. Maybe he goes from 1,900 to 1,500. Then maybe he goes from 1,500. You know, I don't think there's any or much risk in just letting him play that out versus trying to push an extension to where we're giving new money and we're banking money into age 33, 34 years for a running back. And I think Derek's going to kind of want to stay here and finish out his career. So I don't know exactly if he plays it out and has another good season that he's going to be going anywhere anyway. And it's not going to be expensive either which way you cut it. So at his age. So,
all right. It's outstanding discussion. Really appreciate this. We didn't mention Charlie Kohler here, but Charlie, you think is probably tied to the Andrews decision. So it's
right.
A lot of people have been saying it's one of Andrews or Likely. And I still am kind of in that camp and in believing that, but that's not necessarily true. It could be one of Andrews or Kohler.
Yeah. Cause like I said, if they do decide to part ways with Andrews, then it would just make all the sense in the world to try to go to Charlie Kohler and try to get him locked up on a, you know, very minimal complimentary role type deal to kind of pick up some of that slack, you know, that you are losing with Andrews. And that's one thing we don't know is what the Ravens think Kohler's ceiling is. We've seen flashes, you know what I mean? But they obviously know a lot more. So I think that's going to be a big factor in the Andrews decision is what they think of Charlie Kohler and what value they think they could get out of him on a new extension as well.
All right. Outstanding. Now, there's a couple players you didn't include in this. The first is Patrick McCary. You don't have him being re-signed under your plan. So that's one of the Ravens' offensive tackles, which means I think they probably need to re-sign Josh Jones. You're saying don't think that's a lot of money. You said it earlier anyway. So they could fit him under your plan anyway.
Yeah, again, McCary, I think, is a little bit of a luxury item. Josh Jones, I'm sure they could get back in the fold, you know, fairly cheap. So I think if McCary goes to free agency, which he obviously will, pretty much, that there's going to be some team out there who's going to be willing to pay him more than we are for what he is. So I think that's one that maybe he comes back if the market doesn't manifest itself. But I suspect that he's going to be moving on.
Okay, so that is definitely a player there. I would say I was pleasantly surprised with McCary's play at guard, and I know he backstops the Ravens at tackle a lot. Didn't play that well at tackle this year, but still, it'll be tough to be without him. It'll mean that the offensive line depth is significantly gutted again. I think they're even if they re-sign Stanley. And they have Rosengarten and Linderbaum, who would be the set pieces you're talking about. And they would have Fa'alele back. They wouldn't do that. And by the way, you don't have Fa'alele signing to a longer-term deal here, which I think is another opportunity for divisible benefit right now that's on the table. And with the way he finished the season, boy, I'd be wanting to do it.
Yeah. Honestly, Fa'alele just slipped my mind. But you're right. He finished extremely strong. All the things I've heard from you and other people has said he really picked his game up. So, again, how do the Ravens see it? How do other teams, you know, see his play? I'd have to really get into studying where that number would fall because I don't know if I could pinpoint anything right now, but maybe if it's really, you know, low, they could entertain something like that, something very reasonable. I wouldn't be opposed. You know, I mean, he's a lot younger than McCarry, so.
Yeah, he has a playing time escalator that kicked in because he played the whole season this year, but I want to look at really quickly where he is for this next year. I think it's like $3.5 million or something. Yeah, he's at $3.325 million this year. Actually, $3.525 million, including his prorated signing bonus. So that's his cap number. But the Ravens, if they cut him, for instance, they could save $3.3 million. They're not going to do that. He's a great value at that number. But the question is, could you sign his OTC valuation, by the way, $7 million in 2024. So the question is, could you get him for 4 years and maybe $20 to $22 million? Or 3 years and $17 billion.
I was thinking around $5-6 million, maybe around that range. Yeah, that's kind of where I'd be at too. But again, is it a priority? Will they just let him play it out? I'm not sure. Again, it depends how they view him, but he has definitely taken a step forward from where he was in the beginning of the season. That's for darn sure.
Okay. So but the nice thing about your model is you didn't completely leverage all the contracts. So maybe there's room for one more of these. If you have the choice, you always sign a homegrown guy like Falele because it works out in the comp formula for you. You don't want to go and sign somebody else's guy. Every time you take a risk with another draft pick, not only are you creating a black hole of draft capital value that you have to, you know, you have to assign some of yours to address that guard situation. But you also, you end up with the risk the guy's not as good as Falele. And Falele, you know, is certainly impressed me in the last five games of this season. And it was a big turnaround. I mean, it's a gigantic turnaround. He's playing much more physical football right now. It's much more apparent why he was Dallas Sanders's favorite, I should say. I talk about this on some of the other shows, but he lit into Fa'alele one of the last days of camp he had, one of the last days that Joe D was there.
I remember you talking about it at the time.
Yeah, it's one of these things where he clearly likes him. You don't do that to a player you don't care about. You don't do that to a player who's not going to be around. You do that to a player, you're like, damn it, you're letting me down, son. You know, it's literally this. He's thinking of this guy as a legacy player here, and it's too bad. Falele, you know, it's really kind of sad that Jody didn't get to see Falele worked out the way he has. So hopefully Falele wants to stay a Raven. I hope. And I think it makes a lot of sense for him here in terms of what the Ravens try and do offensively, in terms of how Lamar Jackson can bail him out, you know, a fair amount, and how he's progressed as a pass blocker. I think it's just there is a market for him. I just think if I'm Falele, I'd want to be, he's one of the players who is highly incented to sign a deal and not relapse into some bad habits and lack of physicality in his game that would make him a much less valuable commodity come this time next year.
Yeah. So going back to your previous point about the pass blocking being where the value is in a lot of these O-linemen, yeah, where does he fall within that range as far as pass blocking if he went to the market and if, you know, he was a free agent? Where do you think, how would he stack up as far as that's concerned, value?
You know, I'm really lost in a lot of ways in terms of value relative to the market for guards. It's just the market went crazy in this last season. But I'll tell you, the trend line is what I like about Falele. He went from week 11 on, he was not penalized the entire season. And he did have a lot of pressures allowed for the season. It's a not insignificant percentage of the total. I don't have my guard sheet and I kind of don't want to go over the same material. But if you want to, go back and listen to the interior offensive line review with Michael Crawford. And that has breakdowns of where he had a lot of his value lost. But for the entire season, I mean, it's not terrible. I had Stanley for 5.16 sacks. That's 5 5.16 essentially. I had Linderbaum for 3.17, 3.6. And that does include some bad snaps. But Falele actually only responsible for 2 1/3 sacks on the year. Now there's quarterback hits in there, another 2 1/3. But if you look at it in terms of the interior pass blocking problems, Falele was good and Linderbaum was not as good. And some people just would not be able to understand why that would be true. Where Falele is very weak is in missed blocks. He has a lot of trouble connecting on blocks, particularly in level two. So,
and he was playing next to a rookie. I don't know how much that factors in, but it's not like he had Ronnie Stanley next to him.
No, that's a valuable point. Mm-hmm. He's also completely non-flexible in terms of position at this point. I think he's a right guard only. I don't think you can move him to left guard and hope that he'll be able to pull, because he's been particularly bad at that. So he's definitely a limited player, but he just took such a step forward in these last five games. I'd be gambling right now on him. I'd be trying to figure out how the divisible benefit can work out for both parties.
I was trying to think of a Ravens comp, and Orlando Brown just came to my mind for some reason. The big giant. I don't know, but yeah, because Falele is obviously gotten better in that department. So yeah, if they can get him back on a reasonable deal, go for it.
All right, fantastic. The way this is presented here, just absolutely outstanding, Paul. Appreciate you doing it. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Twitter, as always, at the NFL Analysts. If you ever want to see any of the research, just shoot me a DM. I'll happily send it to you. It's quite extensive and a lot of information in there. So.
All right. Really appreciate having you on. And it is short season. Please hit us up. Give me an idea. Just a sliver is always good, but Paul did so much research on this. We're doing three shows. It'll be about a little under 3 hours in total of total conversation on this. That's okay. If you have an idea for a multi-part series, we'll handle it like Paul did. But if you just want to talk about some topic you're really passionate about, the Ravens aren't spending enough on this, or I really love the season X had, or whatever you want to talk about, hit me up. Give me about three bullet points on what you want to discuss. I'll get back to you and we'll talk about this. Thanks again all for all the listens out there. We really have, it has not gone unnoticed. And as usual, word of mouth, this program, if you think you have a coworker or a friend who might like to hear this. Paul, thanks again for coming on.
No problem, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.